Welcome to the Queso Podcast. I'm excited to finally release this very special interview with someone I really admire. And I have to apologize, this interview took place about a year ago. But because of so many moves that I had to make this year and so many things going on in my life, I kind of held off on it because I wanted to do it just at the right time, when I was in the right place as well. I wanted to do it justice. I never lost track of it because I really wanted to release it at a good time when I was in a good place. And this person is always around, so I'm so glad because he's always so active. And I'm just more excited even today to release this interview with Lalo Alcaraz. He's a famous Chicano editorial cartoonist who uses his talent to talk about important social issues. I know you know who he is. He uses humor to start a dialogue. He pulls ideas from real headlines and it's always current. You may see a cartoon that talks about elections, the Supreme Court, gentrification, the appropriation of culture, just like everything that's important, really. And he does it in such a way to keep us interested and keep us laughing even. He's an accomplished illustrator. He's been featured in numerous museums, galleries, publications around the world, on TV, documentaries. He has graphic novels, cartoon books. He's been on the New York Times bestseller list. He was a culture consultant for the Oscar-winning animated Pixar film Coco. I know you've seen that movie, and I'm never tired of seeing that movie. And he was also a producer and consultant for the Casa Grandes, a Nickelodeon animation show. So he has so much experience. He's won so many awards. And just today, I saw he released another cartoon. It has something to do with Trump and his mugshot or something like that, and it was just really cool. So, and he's always just so giving, and I really appreciate him giving of his time to talk to me, to talk to the Queso Podcast, and really so we can document this moment in time, or as it was, that moment in time, which times are changing all the time, and he's always keeping us current in his special way. And without further ado, thank you for listening. Thank you so much for joining me today. It is such a pleasure.
Sure.
And also just for being the humble person that you are and just saying yes, like just saying yes to this opportunity. It's just amazing to me as a Latina creator myself, and just wanting to get the word out about your work and people that, you know, that might not have heard of you, which is, I find that kind of strange of that someone says that to me, but
you must be living in a hole.
Some people must be, but thank you. So yeah, before we go on and talk about your projects and what you got going on today, because I know you said you're going to be doing some drawing today even. What is it that...
That's every day.
Right? I'm sure you always have a whole pot of ideas brewing all the time. Now, the last thing that many people maybe like you said, like if, unless they're living under a rock somewhere, might have heard that you were a consultant for the movie Coco for Disney. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to the point? I know you had a little bit of beef back in the day with Disney for some of the things that they were trying to do with our cultura. And I'm so glad that you called attention to that and in turn were able to become a consultant and really educate their public about la cultura.
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, thanks for having me. Hi. Yeah, every cartoonist makes fun of Disney. It's like comes with the job, you know, like mostly even cartoonists that work for Disney. You know, it's like the mouse is like obviously a big target. And but, you know, we all also watch Disney stuff. So now more than ever, because they own everything, right? So, yeah, a few years ago, the Disney was working on this project, the untitled Day of the Dead theme movie called Dia de los Muertos was the working title at the time. And they it came out that they tried to register the term Dia de los Muertos, you know, for so they can make Dia de los Muertos Happy Meals and all kinds of t-shirts and keychains.
Commercialize it.
Of course. And because it's the title of their movie, right? Which is their right, but where se pasaron is when they tried to trademark a holiday that is celebrated, that is from another country, and that is celebrated from people in this country too. I immediately knew in my mind, it was had to be like a non-diverse lawyer team, right? Like there was not one Latino or Mexican in that I was guessing in that boardroom or whatever, lawyer room to say, that's a bad idea. You know, like anybody, you don't have to be a lawyer to see what they were doing and say, that's not good. That's going to blow up in your face. And sure enough, it blew up in their face, especially after the whole community found out about it. And a professor in Colorado, I think, a Chicano studies professor or Latino studies professor in Colorado, discovered also this filing and made a petition. And that's what really kicked off the ball. Everybody was going bananas. And I mean, I don't know how many, I never signed petitions, honestly, but because people give them to me all the time to sign. But this one I signed, and I don't know how many 10,000 people or so signed it, as I remember. And the Disney company got a wake-up call, whoops, we really stepped in it. And so that happened on a Tuesday night. I think when people found out about the whole thing, by Thursday evening, that Thursday, I dropped my cartoon, Muerto Mouse, depicting Disney as a big, scary 1960s monster, Calavera Mouse, coming to take, your cultura. And so that went viral. By Thursday night, Disney had withdrawn the trademark application. And I always am careful to credit that professor, which I can't remember her name or his name, but I think it's was a her. And, she really kicked off this whole thing. But I like to think that the coup de grace was the cartoon. Somebody told me, might have been anecdotal, but they said that the cartoon got all the way to the Disney president, I think it was Bob Iger, got to his desk and he said, what the F is this? Take care of it, So I think that's when they withdrew the trademark application. Never apologized, but Lee Unkrich, the awesome director of Coco, got, I think, the okay to kind of apologize for the company and say, this should never have happened. Yeah. It was later on, like when the movie was out, And so Lee is super cool and super open, just an amazing director.
I remember reading about this as it was happening and just seeing, more articles about how it was happening than your cartoon. And when the movie was finally about to be released, I remember getting interviews to do with, I don't know if it was one of the producers or one of the directors, and they really wanted to emphasize at that time when they were finally doing interviews, they really wanted to emphasize how they really went to Mexico, made trips, and really got consultants, being you were one of those consultants.
Yeah.
What did that look like for you to consult? And what did you do to show them, like, hey, this is the way it needs to be portrayed in the movie for it to be accurate?
Well, it was a trip because, I've been trying to get into Hollywood since, the early 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And my first show in Hollywood, my first job was working on the Culture Clash TV show. Like I was a writer on that on that show. You know, it was the first Latino sketch comedy show on American television. And so, you know, it was, I had been, you know, years and years in and out doing cartoons, doing writing and trying to get in. And finally, at that point, when they call me, which was about a year after the controversy, Marcela Davison Aviles from Tucson is the team leader on the consultants. We had a trio. She's the one that called and said, look, they want to talk to you and whatever. And so I was like, okay. But at that point, I mean, I had already worked on different shows and I'd worked as a writer for a year on Bordertown on Fox, right. You know, it's like network TV. And so, you know, I was already in. So I think that might've, you know, had it been a year earlier, right when the thing was happening, I think I might've said, no, this is weird. You're just trying to buy me off. But,
right.
And I talked to the producer, you know, when she called me and I said, look, you know, we had steaks and martinis, you know, and, I told them it was my birthday, but it was the day before my birthday or the day after my birthday. Anyways, I was like, it's my birthday.
It's my birthday month.
It's my birthday month. I need a big fat steak. So, you know, I said, I wouldn't do this if it's just a rubber stamp kind of thing, you know, like if it's a real consultant job. Yeah. You know, I'm because, you know, they're going to make that movie with us or without us. They were planning, they were already going to make it without us.
You were afraid your name was going to be on there to legitimize it, but you weren't really going to put your hands in. So you wanted to be sure that you got a real say so.
Yeah, you know, and that at least that they would listen to me, right? Mm-hmm. And I was surprised at to the level that they listened to us. You know, they really, I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I didn't think they were up to shenanigans because, you know, artists are, if you're a good artist, like the filmmakers, I mean, then you're responsible and you want to do the right thing. You know, if you're some kind of a jerk, then you don't care and you suck and you're going to be careless and just put whatever on screen, which is the majority of our representations in Hollywood. Like even our own people put up crap that you know, they don't care about.
And it's unfortunate because that work lives on. That work lives on.
That movie's going to be around in, you know, in 100 years and it's still going to hold up. You know, it's going to be the way they, you know, they did do that. You know, that work of going to Mexico and, you know, they got as many Latinos from within Pixar to work on the film. And they even promoted Adrian Molina as co-director, who really did some good work on it and did songs on it. You know, I mean, they really just said, let's go for it, you know, and then they even said, let's get crazy ass Lalo on this, you know.
That's great.
most people kind of like, I'm not trying to say I'm scary or anything, but I have a reputation. So like,
I like that. I like when people think that, you know, I'm scary or that someone thinks you're scary in a good way. It's called respect, right? Respeto. You know what? I got to say, Coco really got us through some hard times. We had some people close to me that lost a loved one and they had children to explain it to. It really did a great job. And I love that if you watch it in English or Spanish, it doesn't lose the message. It's very strong.
People say in Spanish it's the perfect movie. And I think they're right. It's so good in Spanish. And it just feels seamless. It feels like Mexicans made it, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, like they listen to us on the internal stuff, on the script and writing and this and that, you know. Not all of it was accepted, but a lot of it, you know, and also they were already going in that direction. You know, they were like, they just needed that little extra sharpening, you know, you know, I would have protested had there been something really awkward or dumb or racist to go through. Obviously my name's on it. So, you know, I made it clear to them, you gotta listen to at least what we say. And then so they had us, they started asking us marketing questions. Then they started asking us merchandise questions. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm getting paid. You know, I got my rate, you know, like fly me up. I fly up to the Bay Area to go to Pixar. And it was cool. It was like I was very important consultant, you know.
That is great. And you are very important. You are very important to our community, to Latinos, you know, just representing in these other arenas, like going into government, going into entertainment, and just the culture, la cultura. And like you said, you know, we're making it. We're making it one way. It's even if you're approached as a scary person, but thinking about where we all come from, like I was reading about you, you're from Lemon Grove, California. I'm not sure exactly where that is in proximity to Delano, but I used to live in Delano. I know what you mean.
It's really, really not close at all.
Okay.
It's in San Diego.
San Diego areas. Yes, yeah. Yes. But I get what you're saying. You know, I've read about how you grew up there and maybe not being looked at so positively by law enforcement, even as a child, you know, which is crazy. And we're seeing a lot of that now. Some of the cartoons that you talk about, you know, kind of point in that direction. Are you planning to do any more messages or cartoons that deal with that topic?
Well, you know, if it comes up, I mean, it's got to be organic. And, you know, this week I've been hit up extra by people have always asked me for cartoons. Like, you have to draw about this or whatever, or I have an idea, you know.
Of course.
They're always like 99.9%. I'm sorry, they're not quite there, you know, but keep trying. And but once in a while there's a great idea. I'm like, can I have that? And they're like, yeah, you know, I'll put their name on it, you know, special thanks or whatever, but then I will wholly steal it for myself. But you know, people ask me about, you know, I need you to draw a cartoon about this death row case, or I need you to draw a cartoon about this issue close to my heart, or, you know, and I'm like, you know, I don't want you to be disappointed and I don't want you to hate me when I don't draw it, you know, because I'm an editorial cartoonist, and, you know, most of my work, it's got to come from the headlines, because that's, you know, newspapers, magazines, websites are going to print, publish these cartoons that are about the stuff that's going on right now. Like, that's the reason I did 4 Putin cartoons in 8 days last week, you know, and now I'm doing, you know, Supreme Court cartoons this week, you know, and for the nomination of Justice Jackson, soon to be Justice Jackson.
Yes.
And doesn't that sound like a black superhero name?
Yes.
Justice Jackson.
I did see that one. There is one where she's a superhero. There's a star, right? Is there one where she's wearing a costume like a superhero?
Oh, I don't know, but I drew a little girl.
Yes.
You know, like, I'll tell you the inside story real quick. Nobody knows this, at least in public, but Sonia Sotomayor's comadre is a lady in New York who works in New York City government. And she had invited us to go visit with the justice with her group, a girls group of Harlem girls, I think they're ice skaters. I'm pretty sure they're ice skaters. And so a few years ago, so I got to meet the justice. She has my art in her chambers. You know, she collects Chicano, Latino, and Puerto Rican art, and she has it all over in the hallway, whatever, right? So my Sonia Sotomayor poster is in the that I did for her confirmation. It's in her kitchen. Two cartoons I did. So this lady said, "Hey, we would like you to you know, this is one suggestion I took seriously. Could you do one about Ketanji Brown Jackson?" I'm like, "Of course I can." And because I know they're going to give it to her, you know, they're going to give it to Sonia Sotomayor. Sonia Sotomayor is going to, you know, see her at the bar or wherever, you know, and give it to her. And that's how that came about. So I did that one where a little girl, it's a follow-up to my Sonia Sotomayor cartoon where little girl's looking up at literally as her role model, Sonia Sotomayor. And then this one, I draw the girl and she's playing a judge, but in this one, she's playing a judge superhero and looking up at the image of her on the television of Ketanji Brown Jackson. So
that's amazing.
Representation matters everywhere.
It does, and I often share or retweet what you share. Every time you said, every time this cartoon gets posted, Ted Cruz pees his pants or something like that, and I was like, share, I'm sharing this one. So I love, you know, that you're an artist, but you're also a writer, and I think that's really important for people to understand. You are an artist, but you're also a writer, because you have to have a message with your cartoons, and there's always a message. There's always a message. Where did that come from for you as a child? You always knew you wanted to draw and write, or how did that come about?
Well, I got a head start on it because I have the genes for it. My people, my family, my cousins in Sinaloa are all artists and singers, and they can, you know, their kids are have it, you know, they can draw, like they work freelance for studios in Mexico, for Nickelodeon, for Disney, you know, for Cartoon Network. And they're young guys, the second generation, you know, but I got it from my cousins there, and it just runs in our family. And I'm the first one to fully make a living at it, because they became the older ones, my first cousins, they became CPAs, you know, like they went to
the safe job.
They went to college, and yeah, they became shit safer. They became CPA instructors. So it's
even safer.
Yeah. So they, you know, they had to go to Mexico City to study because there wasn't even a university in Sinaloa at the time. So they made a big move, and they and my mom are very responsible for me being into you know, the cultura so much, because we would go visit them in Mexico City. And that, I mean, look at what I have behind me. You know, I have the, myself as, you know, Lord Donatiu, the sun on the Aztec calendar or sun disc. And I'm obsessed with that and with all the imagery. But yeah, so it was because of all of them and my mom taking me down there, and so I could see that, you know, we weren't second class citizens, and maybe in San Diego we were, because we're treated like immigrants. But in Mexico, it's like Mexico City is like, it's like, it was first time I saw Mexico City is like first time
you know, outsiders
see Wakanda, right? Like in Black Panther, it was like, what? Wow. Is this, you know,
and you're the king of all this, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but well, you know,
it's like your family makes you feel that way, like when your mom takes you for the first time and you remember, you see yourself, and like, this is all yours, mijo, this is you.
Yeah it's like incredible. I have a favorite cartoon that I have to show you real quick. Sorry.
Sure.
My friend Ricardo Cate. He's a Pueblo Indian and from the Kiwa Pueblo in New Mexico, Santo Domingo. And he does this cartoon. It's a dad and his son. Let's see if I can hold it right.
Yes.
And they're standing in front of a big meadow and mountains. It says, "One day, son, none of this will be all yours."
Oh, you know? That's so heartbreaking.
I know. It's so funny. Someday,
it's so heartbreaking, but it's so true.
So
and see, I like that there's artists of all different cultures, you know, waking up to this moment of expressing themselves through art and these wise words, because I feel like our generation, well, the younger generation, even after me, they're becoming more enamored with our culture. And I really think that's important, because I mean, I grew up in South Texas in El Valle. So, you know, one huarache over there and one huarache over here. And there was a lot of pressure sometimes, like are you American enough? Are you Mexican enough? Even when you go to Mexico.
Yeah.
So every time I see or saw your cartoons, you know, like La Cucaracha in the newspaper and things like that, it would give me like a little light of hope, because I write and I love to write. And I thought, you know, here we are. We're considered Chicanos, right? When you have, you're of Mexican descent, but you're born here and you're kind of like, they call you pocha or pocho because you can't speak. Either one, right? You know, Tex-Mex, Tejano, whatever you want to call it. Now, my parents are in the early 70s, and they still don't have that Spanish 100%. It's very mucho, very Tejano. But I think your cartoons have really helped someone like me, I got to speak for myself, feel like I belong to something. You know, I belong to this group. I belong to being a Chicano. And I feel like it makes me want to own it even more.
Yeah, and it's legit, you know.
It's legit.
We're a thing.
We're a thing, a real thing. And, you know, when you talk about the boardroom, when you're talking about Coco and all that, you know, this is what I do as a freelance job, because I also write freelance and do theater reviews and things like that. But I have a day job where I have to use my credentials and my studies that, you know, I studied writing and publishing and all this, but I have to use that to be accepted in this, you know, white society, where is my opinion going to matter? But a lot of times I've experienced, even with my education, someone with less education, because they're not brown, because they're white, were listened to more than me, even though I had more experience and more education. And so that's something I, you know, people like me live through on a daily basis in a professional setting.
So. This reminds me of us. It's true. And I'm glad, and I appreciate that, you know, you read the comics and got them. It reminds me of a story of my first consulting job. I think I made $75. And it was me and I had a writing partner, Stefan Zuhl. And we used to do Pocho Magazine back in the day. It was a zine. Anyway, we were writing with, we were working for Gregory Nava. We would write, we wrote a couple of scripts for his production company. We actually got paid by studios to do it back in the day when they used to do that. Now screenplays are a dime a dozen, you know, and they wouldn't even give you the dime, you know. And so there was that show, 6 Feet Under. Do you remember that show, 6 Feet Under?
Actually, I don't. I'm sorry. I'm not going to lie.
It's an HBO show. And it was about a mortuary family that runs a mortuary. It was a really good show, really award-winning show. They had a scene in every scene in the beginning, there would be a scene where somebody dies. They show how that person that's going to be buried that week or day in the mortuary, how they died. Right. So there's one scene where the person is a viejita, in a hair salon, and she has like a stroke and dies in the dryer. Hair dryer thing, the big dryer, right? And so we got called in by the writer directing that scene. She wrote the episode, and she's now the writer of that show. What was it called? It's a trans show. It was a famous show.
With the claws? No, not claws.
Not claws. Anyway, so she's her Jill Soloway. She's like a big deal now. But back then she wrote that episode. Anyway, she got a hold of us and said, hey, could you come down for this scene through our agent? Come and check out this scene and just give us feedback right as we do the scene. And because the hairdresser, like the little old lady was a white lady that died, but the hairdresser was like a, like kind of a trans Central American character that was like flamboyant. I think it's supposed to be Puerto Rican.
Okay.
Toast show. And, so, you know, we helped like riff some lines and, you know, stuff for that character to say, right? Because it obviously was a Latina character. And there was an assistant director, a white dude, like a young white, like my age at that time, you know, I was like 30 something, I mean, not even 40. And he was there and he was like, I don't know why you guys are here. Like, I could have done this. I don't know why you, and I was like, this guy is openly, he feels so empowered and privileged. He's telling me to my face, like, you shouldn't be here because I got this. Because why? Because he's a mediocre white dude that knows how to finesse this like scene in Spanglish. You know, like, no, he does. He's not qualified. And then at that moment, we were over, you know, we were way more qualified than that guy. But that guy could not handle it, to the point where he risked me punching him in the nose, you know, talking shit to him.
That would have been lovely.
I wouldn't have done it because I was a professional, unlike him, you know, who's like trying to make me feel shitty for being on, you know, doing my job. So, you know,
this is
what we're watching on the Supreme Court thing right now.
You know,
a bunch of mediocre white dudes
interviewing her.
Interrogating.
Yeah.
An overqualified candidate.
Totally overqualified. I don't recall watching the show, but I think what I would have done is get a Weibo and rub it all over her. First of all, to see if she's really dead. Get out some sage, clean her body. Una limpia.
Well, it's more like check a pulse.
No, before I let you go, I just wanted to just mention that I know you've also been doing some work for educating our people on the COVID-19 vaccine and getting vaccinated.
All communities are suffering from misinformation, disinformation, but we are, you know, it just takes showing people the truth, you know, and you can bring them over, but it's a lot of work, you know, it's hard. And doing a couple cartoons, you know, and sending them out to the public, if it changes one person's mind, then good. But you just need to bombard them with the truth. And we need to shoot down, we need to shame people that are misinforming our community, call them out. And counter them with the truth, you know, and that's what we got to do. It's affecting our health. It's affecting our elections. I mean, it's affecting our relations in between us. And, you know, it's just it's a big problem.
Even our sources of income, it's affecting money. It's affecting our, you know, our finances within our families. And, you know, I know it's one cartoon, like you said, but I think it takes a comunidad, it takes all of us. Like, if I see your cartoon and that's the best way I can share it with a certain person, I'm going to send it to that person. I'm going to talk about them. So it's a chain, you know, we got to keep the chain going.
And remember, it makes Ted Cruz pee, so.
Yes, also. Yeah, so, you know, I'm from Texas. I don't take a lot of pride in that sometimes because, you know.
I love my Texas friends. About that.
Yeah, well, you know, when I visit Texas, I definitely feel that. I feel that pressure and I feel that attitude, and I was like, you know what, I'm just glad I moved away when I did and got to see more things, because I think a lot more people need to do that. Now, if you can't do it by way of traveling, read more, you know, look at other things that other people are doing. There are ways to inform yourself and just come out of your shell.
Open your mind, but not so widely that your brains fall out.
Very good advice. Keep it intact because we'll need it. Well, Lalo, thank you so much. I truly appreciate you. I admire you and admire your work, and eyes are on you all the time. So
I
know I'll see what's up when it comes out next.
Yeah, let's do another. I'm doing more animations for the state of California. We're starting to maybe pull some celebrities into it. And then I'm working on, you know, developing some shows, and I just signed a development deal for a certain comic strip, but I have not announced it yet.
Nice, I'll be looking out for that.
Show, so, you know, we have a year to make that one happen.
Okay.
So I got a lot of stuff coming out, you know, in the next year or so.
That's great, and hopefully no te olvides de los pobres, you know, we're a little writer over here in Chicago. So ahí estamos, muchas gracias, God bless you, and all the best to you.
Thank you, igualmente, and thanks for sharing the cartoons.